Hello and welcome to The Double Pivot, the world's most agreeable soccer analytics podcast. I am Michael Cayley. We are back, and it was one of those weeks in the Premier League. There were some weird results, certainly, but ultimately, there was very little that we felt that was worth sort of diving deep on. Very little that changed the way we look at specific teams. And so we are going to, instead of having one focus, bring an idea that we did on a subscriber podcast a little bit ago, a lightning round. This is going to be difficult for us. We did not finally execute the lightning round concept for our subscribers, though we tried our best, and we will again. The idea is that one of us has a take, and then that's it. The other person does not respond and get into an ongoing back and forth, thus leading to a 20-minute discussion about one topic. We actually finish many topics. Let's see if we can do it. I'm joined by Mike Goodman. He's going to try his best.
The music you heard on the way in is Whalers. Please download, subscribe, make us happy as podcasters, patreon.com/doublepivot. Come hang out in the Discord that we share with Grace Robertson and her newsletter, Grace on Football. It's a great place to hang out and talk soccer and non-soccer related topics. Let's do lightning round. You wanna throw something to me? You wanna start with something? How do you wanna do this?
Well, I just wanna hear you talk about Everton, man.
Yeah! They're good! I mean, they're not, like, good, but they are certainly not bad. And I guess the best way to describe how I am feeling about Everton right now is that they may have a looming 12-point deduction for various financial chicanery, which is what happens when you are run in name but not in actual any, like, legal sense by a Russian oligarch who then, you know, has to, like, cut and leave. And so, they've been sold to 777 Partners. This is all disastrous. Everything about that is bad. They could get a 12-point deduction. And yet, I think even with all of that, this is like a pretty decent Everton team. They drew Brighton 1-1 over the weekend. And like, I'm slightly disappointed with that because they scored an early goal and then defended really well. And then they just conceded an own goal in like the 84th, 85th minute. We've talked about how this team plays. But the bottom line is that this team is, they're not defensive, but the balance of how they attack and how they defend leaves them as a team that's kind of mid-table-ish when you look at it when it's all said and done. And they've gone from a team that was playing somewhat below their talent level to a team that is playing somewhat above their talent level. And I don't know how you just don't get entirely Dyche-pilled by this. So I have been entirely Dyche-pilled. I'm happy that I get the version of Sean Dyche that still eschews possession, but is not like super defensive most of the time. So I don't lose my mind. And all of it is like the happiest I've been watching Everton since the first 6 to 8 weeks of Carlo Ancelotti's tenure. Back when James Rodriguez like spent a month and a half being amazing before he was like, all right, I have to live in Liverpool and I really don't like it here. That's my Everton take. I don't think it's anything different, as will be a theme here, but like, they're like legitimately decent. My new troll opinion on them is that they're going to survive by 13 points and get hit by a 12-point deduction to once again remain in the Premier League by a single point. You want to talk about Brentford? Brentford's pretty good, right?
Yeah, I think that like if there's a team that we haven't really addressed properly based on what they've done so far this season, it's probably Brentford. Brentford have moved up to 9th in the table, and that corresponds with the 7th best goal difference and the 6th best expected goal difference. So, like, you know, their table position is now starting to reflect a little bit better how well they have been playing, thanks to a close run win over West Ham this weekend. And the way that they're playing is, I think, interesting because they are, you know, they are a team that likes to play on the break. They are a team that has had less than 50% possession this season while having a well above average number of goals and expected goals and conceding a reasonably large number of goals and expected goals at the same time. And when teams are like this, this sort of brings us back to our How Are Newcastle So Weird podcast, because Newcastle have been scoring, continue to score all of these goals while not touching the ball in the penalty area very much. And you might think, oh, that's what Brentford are. They play on the break. They get very few touches in the penalty area, but they execute on those. And that is not the case. Brentford don't get to have the ball that much. Brentford have had about 2,000 fewer touches, which is about, you know, 25% fewer touches than Brighton or Man City, but they are wedged right between the two of them in total number of touches in the opposition penalty area. They have way fewer touches in other areas of the field, particularly in the attacking third. Brentford don't touch the ball in the attacking third very much, but when they do, it is to very quickly move it into the penalty area. So, like, that continues to work. That's an interesting, like, how far back do you regress? Do you regress the amount of XG a team gets per penalty area touch? The data I put together suggests you probably should. How much should you regress the number of penalty area touches a team gets per final third touch? I would be more confident, like, watching Brentford and just sort of generally in the data, that this is something that a team can do the way that they play. And so long as that's happening, they're going to be getting a good number of chances for Mbeumo and Vissa. And that's a good team. That is a real attack. Like, you know, it's going to be hard to get into whatever the, like, European places are, given the quality of these teams. But with a few bounces, that's the level that Brentford are playing at, which is very impressive. I continue to think that Thomas Frank is a little underrated for what he's done, because the kind of football that he plays is tailored to his team and his talent and his wage bill rather than fancy. And I think it's that he does this is also a very good sign.
Going to get a little point in here on Thomas Frank.
Love it.
Because I can't help myself. Which is to say that oftentimes when that happens, it is a happy coincidence that a manager's style is not fancy but tailored to his player and he gets results and then he goes somewhere else and that doesn't happen. What we've seen with Thomas Frank is him play a number of different styles, each married to his talent. And I think that speaks very well of him.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so would you like to offer any takes on Brighton, who I think we may have been subtweeting a little bit here in that last section?
They're pretty good. I personally am sad about Brighton, because I was hopeful that Brighton could magic their way into, like, a run at the top four. But I think what has happened this year is that, in fact, a number of teams are good. And so when a number of teams are good, what that means is that, like, three or four other teams have sort of hauled themselves up to the level of Brighton, which means there are less obvious points for Brighton to go and get to compete with the top four. When you have, I mean, Newcastle maybe being the second best team in the league as opposed to, like, competing for top four, and Aston Villa being better than they were last year, or at least as good as they were late in the year last year, and, you know, Spurs taking a leap forward, and Brentford we just talked about, and Chelsea, despite being 13th in the table, being, I think we both agree, somewhat improved. What you just have is a very crowded top of the table. It gets very hard when you look at the stats to find a big four or a big six this year. There's just kind of a curve from 1 to 10. And Brighton are in there somewhere in, like, that 5 to 10 range. But they're not, like, distinctively better than these other teams, and it's just, like, it's not surprising. Rising, right? Like, Caicedo is gone and they haven't really found production to replace that. Mitoma is as good as he was last year, but hasn't, like, sort of taken a step forward. Ferguson, who we've, like, waxed poetic about, is just good. Like, good for a 19-year-old. Like, nothing at all concerning about his development, but not, like, you know, playing like one of the Barcelona kids, for example. And they continue to be quite measured with his minutes, which is, I think, good. You know, they got Ansu Fati, who hasn't really, like, performed. They've had a couple of other injuries, including to Solly March. And so, like, things have just not gone quite perfectly Brighton's way. And with things not going perfectly Brighton's way, and a better league, they're a good but not great team that I was disappointed when Everton drew with over the weekend.
Yeah, it's just really tough. Even with them investing some money in the squad. As far as we know, they continue to just be a money losing concern, which is trying to be as good as they can with a good analyst background. There's still, like, it's just hard to build a team that can really compete in that many competitions. You get a couple injuries and here you are.
That's right. I don't know. Do you have any other team you are dying to talk about here, or should I just, like, make you talk about somebody?
Yeah, pick somebody.
Okay. Well, I just talked about all these teams that are pretty good. And then there's West Ham. What do you think about West Ham?
Yeah, so West Ham started the season near the top of the table and have not surprisingly fallen down it. And they're now out of the top 10. They have a slightly below average goal difference and slightly below average expected goal difference. And they are yet another team sort of in the range of Everton and Brentford, who play a style where they don't have the ball very much, but that does not mean that they are defensive, even though they allow the other team to have quite a bit of the ball. The main reason that they are below average is that they are a well below average defensive team in terms of the chances that they are conceding. And Moyes has been doing this now on and off for the last couple of years, where he's going to defend in a low block or mid block most of the time and try to spring it. But when they try to spring it, they really get numbers forward and they're at risk of being countered, and they just, like, don't have great defenders. And this season, they've kind of, like, doubled down on that with James Ward-Prowse. James Ward-Prowse is playing all the time in a two in central midfield. And he doesn't do very much besides create chances for other people. He's doing a little bit more running into the penalty area to get a few shots in open play in a way that he didn't do as much for Southampton. Like, Moyes is trying to maximize the amount of attacking contribution that he can get from James Ward-Prowse's peculiar set of skills. And that is just kind of obviously going to make the team worse defensively. I'm not sure that it's worth it to do this for what James Ward-Prowse gives you, but it certainly is fun. I don't know. They're fine. The other thing is that Mikel Antonio really does seem to have hit the cliff. Last season was a bad season. Sometimes guys have a bounce back year still left in them in their 30s. He doesn't seem to. And if I think that the West Ham, more than about just anybody else in the Premier League, like, should be looking at going and finding a striker in the January window. This is a team that could get so much better with a striker in January. Mikel Antonio, his next shot will be his 10th of the season in the Premier League. You just can't work with that.
That's not very good. I'm not adding anything.
Yeah, no. We're not
flying. We're flying through this.
We are flying through this. All right, let's talk about a big team. What do you have to say about Liverpool?
They are either the second or third best team in the Premier League, depending on what degree you want to believe in Newcastle, who currently sit, by the way, in sixth on the table. I was skeptical of Liverpool's plan to fix midfield without a defensive midfielder, but all in, I think it is working. I just think that they have so much attacking firepower. I mean, despite a bad performance against Luton this week, they're the second best team. And I think that they are going to be competitive to win the Europa League while using basically their B team. And while I don't think they're going to win the Premier League, it's not like, you know, out of the realm of possibility. I just think that, like, Manchester City are the best team, and either Liverpool or Newcastle are the second best team. And to be honest, I don't really understand why this midfield is working as well as it is, except for maybe I'm just supposed to think that Szoboszlai is that good, who is giving them a ton of attacking output, plus defensive pressing output, plus structural stability there. And maybe that's just all there is to it, that when they are extremely front-footed, you can get away with McAllister at the six, supported by the, you know, Trent, P- pinching in from right back. Like, I am conceptually still find myself being skeptical of this, but the numbers and the production have just sort of convinced me that I'm wrong to be skeptical. So, yeah, Liverpool are very, very good. That's what I got.
I feel similarly. I like, you know, you just have to accept what's in front of your face, even as, like, you can't quite fit it into a model that works. The other thing that I think that I'm seeing with Liverpool, and there's some numbers that can back this up, is that they are really not pushing their back seven very high up the pitch. Even Szoboszlai does not get into the penalty area that much. And that is the other thing that can allow you to defend reasonably well without a lot of defending talent.
And then, like, again, they're the most XG in the Premier League, despite playing a man down for, like, extensive periods of time. So when you're not aggressively pushing people forward, and you're creating a ton of really good chances, like, that just puts you in such an advantageous position for everything else on the field.
Yeah, like, you know, Mikel Antonio's 9 shots is just like a normal Darwin output in a game.
Oh, so now you got to talk about somebody. Why don't you go talk about the bottom? I don't care which of the bottom 4 teams you want to talk about. Clearly, the bottom 4 are in a division of terrible by themselves. Pick whichever one you want.
The only one that I find remotely interesting is Bournemouth.
Yeah.
Because they were the one that... It was an interesting thing where if you looked at the XG table from last season, you would have said, well, probably the most likely Premier League team to be in the bottom is Bournemouth. And we were reasonably hopeful about what they had done in the summer being enough to lift them above that level. Going and getting a new manager, maybe not a great idea in retrospect, given what's going on in another team. And going and adding a fair amount of attacking talent, plus a proper Premier League defensive midfielder. And so, I mean, I do think that's where you start, which is that one of the reasons that it was reasonable, I think it was reasonably hopeful about this team, is they went and added a solid Premier League defensive midfielder. And one of the reasons it was possibly, you know, reasonable to be not so optimistic about this team was that they went and added a solid Premier League defensive midfielder who's injured all the time. And Tyler Adams has gone and is getting a second surgery, I think, on the same hamstring.
That is correct.
That is not good.
It's not.
That is not good. And it seems very clear to me, watching the way that Areola has this team playing with the ball, there's just an obvious Tyler Adams-sized hole in the team. They're going to lose the ball sometimes, and someone is supposed to make defensive plays. And when your central midfield, when, like, you know, Ryan Christie is regularly playing in central midfield. Philip Billing is up there, but he's getting forward. Like, there's just no one to make those plays for you. And that is very bad. So they are consistently turning the ball over and then giving up high quality scoring chances. And they have to fix that. If they don't fix that, they are just as bad as these other teams at the bottom. At the same time, there should be more attacking production from a number of these players. Ouattara and Kluivert and Semenyo, he's clearly trying to rotate players in and out, and none of them are producing for him. And this leads to playing a lot of guys that I'm more skeptical are going to give him the output that he wants, like Tavernier. But in any case, like, Areola, I think I can imagine him finding a better way to get more attacking talent, attacking production out of some of the varied attackers that they added for him. I can imagine him figuring out a way to play a much more conservative style that allows them not to be conceding all of these good chances off of turnovers, but something's gotta give. And if what happens is that those things are not easily solvable and Areola is not the manager to solve them, and the dumb idea before the season, bad XG, bad team, was just correct, wouldn't be shocked either. So I have more hope that they can pull out of the bottom three than I am hopeful that any of the other bottom four can pull out of there, but they need to actually do it, and it wouldn't be that surprising if they don't.
Yeah, I mean, one of those, I mean, look, I guess it's a long season, and Luton, Bournemouth, Burnley, and Sheffield United, like, I suppose more than one of them could survive, but I don't know. Like, there's a pretty big gap. There's a pretty big XG gap. There's a pretty big points gap. There's a pretty big skills gap. Like, there's just a pretty big gap.
Yep. That is where we're at.
There's a 5-point gap between Bournemouth and Luton at 17 and 18 and Everton at 16. There's then a 5-point gap between Everton at 16 and Brentford at 9. I was talking before about like the relatively easy curve in like the top 10 and XG and stuff. Like, the place where there seems to be a pretty well-defined gap in the table is 17th to 16th. And then kind of from like the top 10, like at the 10 mark is the other one.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how well each of these pieces hold.
Yeah.
Another team that one might have reasonably thought was down at the bottom based on their performance, not quite as bad as Bournemouth's, but down there is Wolves.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Gary O'Neill. Gary O'Neill may just be a good manager. I don't have a ton to say about how Wolves play other than, like, we have said for a number of years, they seem to have some fun players that were not allowed to be fun. And that is no longer the case. That, like, they get the ball to good players who are good on the ball in spaces where those good players can do things with them, whether it is pulling out on the wing or dropping off the back line. And then those players do fun things. Like, there is nothing by itself that is interesting about how Wolves are succeeding in the Premier League. But what is interesting is that Wolves, for a very, very long time under a succession of managers, were successful by being exceedingly dull. And they are no longer that. They are a much more typical team, but being a much more typical team seems to fit their talent a lot better. And I would also say that they got rid of a couple of midfielders who we were sort of like, I'm not sure what these midfielders do and that they're all that good. And a lot of people seem to think that they were good. And losing them has not seemed to have made Wolves worse.
Yeah, this has not been a great data point for Ruben Neves.
No.
Say that much.
Yes, that is correct. So Wolves themselves are, like, they're not... What I mean when I say they're not interesting is that, like, they're 13th in XG and they're, like, 14th in XG against. They're, like, not great. But this was a team that we thought was maybe going to be terrible. So just sort of being basically not great is super in the right direction. Is like a step super in the right direction.
Yep, and they play a lower event style of play than they used to. They used to be really boring with a somewhat higher event style of play, a lot of defensive possession, and now they're like just trying to counter more, you know?
Yep.
While sitting back and defending.
Pedro Neto's really good, apparently.
When he's not hurt, he's been consistently very good.
Yep, that's Wolves. Gonna make you talk about another big team again now. I feel like we've talked about them a ton, but I just feel like it's worth pointing out Manchester United's not goodness.
Yeah, they were so bad against Fulham. They won on a nice late shot by Bruno, and it was a roughly even game. You know, I think when we were talking about, you know, where the breaks in the table, one of the places you could sort of question that is whether Fulham deserve to be clearly out of that bottom four. They yes. are by points, and that's probably good enough.
Like, non-penalty XG, I think there's kind of like a gap between Fulham and Burnley at like 16th and 17th, but like if you take the penalties out, like if you put the penalties back in, it's a lot closer.
Yeah, and again, like as we said at the time, it's just not clear to me how this United team is really supposed to be good. I think that like the one player where you might say maybe this is something the manager is doing wrong, besides Sancho, is why is Varane not starting? I don't yep. really get it. It's possible that he is cooked. It's possible that he is injured. It's possible he can only play so many minutes. But it does seem weird. But for the most part, like, the problem with this team is that they got hit by injuries and age at positions where they didn't make a plan for what they do if they got hit by injuries and age. That's just it. They got hit by injuries and age at center midfield and center back, and they have no answer for that. And they also went and signed Hoyland, and Hoyland is producing below the level that he was projected to. But he was also not projected to produce at a very high level. Like, it all is downstream, I think, of the way this team was constructed. I think that should they be able to get Casemiro back, and Casemiro's had stretches of play in his career where he's looked like he didn't have it, and then found a way to get it back. Like, that certainly could happen. He could adjust to what he's lost and the risks of injuries and stuff like that and do a little better. Eriksen could do a little better. Lissandro will come back from his injury. Like, all this team should be better than this, but they're going to have dropped so many points, and I don't see how they get to a level where, even if they should stop being like the 12th best team in the Premier League and start being the 7th best team in the Premier League, even if that happens, how do they get enough points to be pushing for the European places? It seems very unlikely, unless they just keep getting all the breaks.
I can't tell you how funny it is that Newcastle are in 6th with 20 points, and Manchester United are like tied for 7th with 18. And like, you don't have to be like fancy about it. Newcastle are in 6th with 20 points and a goal difference of plus 16. Their goal difference is the second best of the Premier League. Whereas Manchester United, 2 points behind them, have a negative 4 goal difference.
Manchester United are the only team in the Premier League that has have a draw yet. If you can avoid draws...
They are not. Manchester City also does not have a draw.
Oh, that's true. I didn't look that high up the table.
The city of Manchester is allergic to draws.
Allergic to draws. Great way to maximize your points. Also, not really something that you can actually do as a strategy.
What do you want me to talk about? You have any thoughts for me as we come to the end of our podcast of like semi-interesting things?
Semi-interesting things. Speaking of semi-interesting things, Arsenal.
I mean, you know, it's interesting because I think like the popular nerd take after last year was like, competitive, like probably not competitive for the Premier League, but probably a top four team. And I think that's where they are settling into here. But I don't necessarily think that the way they've gotten here is the path I would have picked, which is they're a little scuffly in attack. They're not super healthy. Declan Rice has been a freaking godsend, and they've gotten nothing out of Kai Havertz. And obviously Timber gets hurt in the first, in the first game that he plays. So it's hard to see this as part of a progression. Like, I think that the way I was envisioning it was like, oh, parts of this team will get better, but they won't run as hot. And so they'll take a step back in the table, but you can probably, like, for the project, envision it as a step forward. And they've scuffed together enough points and really enough production to be like a Champions League caliber team. But it hasn't been in the vein of like taking a step forward, young players getting better while the team collectively gets less lucky or like runs less hot. They've just sort of like been a pretty good team scuffing out points. And enough points. And that's fine. I don't think that that's bad. But I think that, like, I am concerned for Arsenal because the path to them being, like, Premier League contenders, I don't think exists if either Gabriel Jesus is not on the field or Kai Havertz is not becoming really good. And it doesn't seem like either of those things are happening. Or I guess like Saka becoming a super duper uber star, which also not really happening. And so you put all that together and it's like, I am more worried about the cap on this talent than I was coming into the season. Even as they are sort of solidifying their position in the top four after last season, which I think was not necessarily a given. I just feel like their level, the variance in where I might expect them to finish has lessened a great deal, but the cap has maybe come down.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that the big question is what has happened to the shot production of all of their forwards. Everyone is down. Even Jesus is down. Odegaard's down a lot. Like, what's going on here? And is it a case of a strategy change where everyone is playing somewhat worse because the whole team is more conservative and it pays off on defense? Is it the case that, like, you need to fit these players? How, like, I am very skeptical of the Arsenal fan take that all of these players are perfect little puzzle pieces that only fit together in certain ways but not in others. Like, people always think that's the case. And usually players, like, when it's good, they just figure out a way to make it work together. There's enough of them who aren't bad. The other question is, to what degree did a whole bunch of guys have 80th, 90th percentile seasons last season? And it's not that surprising in that context that Saka, Nketiah, Odegaard, Martinelli are falling back. And I don't think it's that and not the other things. I think the question is, how do those things all balance out? And
I just think it's a lot of, like, you maybe only had 11 really good players. Or 12. And now, all of a sudden, like, the way you ran hot, right, was that, like, you got a lot out of Jorginho, including, like, some dramatic game-winning goal, right? Like, maybe the reason that the good players' numbers are down is that they're playing with the depth pieces a lot more, who just aren't that good.
And they're, you know, not getting midweek rests and all those sorts of things. A lot of different possibilities. And exactly how those would then project based on which one of them is the problem, I don't really know. Like, again, the problem here is still Arsenal. Whatever's going on, Arteta has figured out a way to make them an incredibly good defensive team.
Yeah.
And that's more than enough to be, you know, solidly in top four, top five. I don't see them falling out. Like, you need to have both the attack stay cold and the defense get a big step worse, which doesn't seem super likely. So they should be fine, but it's a weird arrangement of things.
I mean, it might just be the reverse, right? Where Saliba's on the field. And, like, because they just got really significantly worse defensively down the stretch with Saliba coming off the field.
I mean, I do think the question of, are they playing in a way that Arteta created because with Saliba out, they had some defensive problems, and this way of playing is not the right way to play when you do have William Saliba, is also a plausible story of what's going on.
I think there's a lot of plausible stories. I just sort of think a lot of the root of all of the plausible stories is, like, which of the good players are playing and which of the good players are hurt? And, like, a team that is improved defensively and worse in attack when their attackers are in and out of the lineup and their defenders are on the field versus last year when they were better in attack and worse in defense when their attackers were on the field and their best defender was hurt. Like, that to me just seems pretty normal.
Yeah, seems about right. All right, so I think that is a reasonable coverage of the Premier League. Just, we are recording this on Monday, shortly before the Tottenham-Chelsea match, so there'll probably be some Tottenham-Chelsea takes coming up on this pod at some point, but it felt a little bit silly to do it and then release it after the game. So we'll come back to that later, and we will see you on the Discord. You can sign up at patreon.com/doublepivot to you know, keep chatting there, and we'll have more podcasts.
Cheers, y'all.
Cheers.